Dorothy Germain. I used to be Dorothy Sprinkling. I went to Normal in 1928-29, and with those I have met again after 50 years, we all feel the same way, that no year in all our years at school affected us or changed us as much as Normal did. And it certainly left its stamp. The building had an atmosphere that just seemed to envelop you with all the desire to do your best, and the teachers, the head, Dr. McLaurin, was a man who inspired one, a man who was very fair. His staff were all of the same caliber, and they all left their impressions, which certainly did us no harm. We had C.D. Woods, who was our English teacher, a very tall man. For a long time, I was just a bit in awe of him. But towards the end of the year, Rabindranath Tagore came, and he had an evening at the Capitol. And my friend and I had not been able to get tickets, but we thought we'd go and stand and see if maybe we could slip in. We were at the head of the line when Mr. Wood came out of his car, and the car drove off. But just before him, a chauffeur had brought in a little lady in a fur cape who was very distressed. And from the time she left her car till the time she reached the ticket office, she was practically crying because she had mislaid her tickets, and she had waited all these years to see Rabindranath Tagore, and here she didn't have any. Was there any chance that they could locate her seat? Was there anybody that they knew who was not going to appear? The lady in the wicket, she tried to calm her down, and the usher came out, and he was talking to her, and out stepped C.D. Wood. Now, he had spoken to us in the school that day, saying what a privilege it was going to be and how he was looking forward to it. But he stepped forward and he said, "Madam, you may use my ticket." He gave her her ticket and turned and walked away very quickly. But it certainly set him a step above a lot of people, you know, in my mind it did. And therefore I lost my awe of him, but not my respect by any means. Mr. Freeman was a lovable man who carried you along with him. He had a sense of humor, which he tried to control and did quite well, but nevertheless his classroom was always pleasant, you seemed to get more from his lectures for the very reason that he kept that atmosphere. Mr. Denton, he was an abrupt individual, very forceful, but you couldn't miss the point where he was, because he made things very clear. Miss Riddell, she was the primary instructress. She was a chippy little bird, a very sweet person. One memory of Miss Riddell is when she had the model school into the model. We had to go into the model school, and she was to demonstrate a lesson in teaching reading. She had a bird cage, and it had a little plastic bird in it, and it stood on a stand with a hoop, and hung very nicely. And she had a little boy standing beside her, and she said, "Now, Sammy, what is this?" Sammy just stood. "Sammy, that's a bird in a cage." "What is it, Sammy?" "It's a bird in a cage." "No, Sammy, it's a bird in a cage." "Well, that's what I said. It's a bird in a cage." And she turned to the class and said, "Jennifer, come and speak to Sammy." And this is Sammy's sister. So Sammy's sister said, "Sammy, it's a bird in a cage." "Oh, is it?" he said. Mr. Dell said, "What is it, Sammy?" "It's a bird in a cage." "Well, that's what I was saying." Sammy said nothing. But that was Miss Riddell. But she didn't let it slither. I mean, she had a instant reaction. She had the sister up beside her immediately. And from then on, the lesson went well because it was established that it was a bird in a cage. That's all. But she was a dear. There was Miss Isbister. She was the domestic science teacher. A very sweet person. We had sewing with her, and I remember making a dress. My mother made my dresses and my coats and everything. And she was ill that year, put quite a bit of pressure because she was ill. But I took this dress home because I had taken a pattern that was a little bit too complex, really. And Mother showed me what to do, and I did it. When I took it back to Mrs. Isbister, she said, "Miss Sprinkling, that's not the way that should be done." So I had to undo it. And that dress, when I finally finished it, really suffered for the fact that it was undone. But she was good. Then we had Miss Corsier in the physical ed, and I think he was a sergeant, but I know he was very good. There was no letdown in their attitudes. They were always the same. I never saw any of them in a fit of anger. They didn't have to. They were so well established. There was none of that. But this sergeant was.
Would it be Sergeant Baines?
Sergeant Baines. That's right. But he was, straight as a die. And at that time, I had learned to whistle when I was about 14. Our summer camps at Cadova Bay, Harry D, who was principal of the high school for a number of years, he taught me how to whistle, how to fill my mouth full of water and warble, so that I used to whistle at the Friday afternoon lit meetings. And one day he followed me from the auditorium, and he was right behind me as I went, turned into my locker, and he said to me, "Miss Brady, I'd like a word with you." And I said, "Yes, Sergeant Baines. Do you ever hear a little ditty?" And I said, "What is that?" He said, "Well, a whistling maid and a crowing hen are sure it comes to some bad end." And he went off laughing his head off. That was his sense of humor. But those were the teachers, and as I say, they all left their stamp. They certainly did. Friday afternoon was lit afternoon. That's when the different committees, they had the drama and the debating society, and the classes would put on a little entertainment, and they were always most interesting. In the drama, first year I was secretary in the second of the drama committee, and then the second year I was vice president. But we had fun. There were a number of plays, and of course the debating society, they did a lot of debating. We had between classes and between Oh, they brought in other outside people for their debating, too. They did very well. We had some poets and some poetesses and some... there were several who wrote plays. And I remember one play we put on was about a flower shop. And I don't know how many dozen roses. For nights I was rolling roses. But we did the dollhouse in modern dress. And I had seen it in the costume of the time, and it was marvelous. And somehow or other that really upset me in the modern dress. It didn't have the same atmosphere one tiny bit. But still, it was well done, and everybody enjoyed it. Another thing, Mr. McLaren, that was the time when Mr. Hinchcliffe was the Minister of Education. And we had this auditorium in the afternoon, and he addressed us. And out of clear air, he called for someone to come up and recite God Save the Queen, King. Well, do you know that about six, one after the other, and poor Mr. McLaren, I looked at him in horror because I thought, well, this is bad, you know. And Mr. Hinchcliffe was rather caustic. He really was rather caustic. And I looked at Mr. McLaren some more, and I could see that he wasn't feeling so badly. He was really feeling most annoyed. The fact that, then he said, well, sing it. Well, we had a girl by the name of Ursula Tom. She had a beautiful voice. And she started, but she couldn't finish. You know, the tension in that auditorium was just such that it broke your confidence, and that was it. Well, I've forgotten what it really ended up with. Noah, I think he eventually stood up and completed the God Save the Queen, but I think he had a cardboard in his hand. Anyhow, of course, we sat. After they left, we had to stand, and then we sang God Save the King, of course, and nobody made a move to leave that auditorium. Mr. McLaren took Mr. Hinchcliffe to the door, but he never went past the auditorium door. He left somebody else, I don't know who it was, maybe Mr. Denton, to take him outside, and that was the first time Mr. McLaren did not take a guest right out to his car. So we knew he was annoyed, but he just stood at the door, and he shook his head, then he grinned. Went out and closed the door. Of course, the whole auditorium, we were all abuzz. We were so mad. I think if any of us could have got at Mr. Hinchcliffe, we'd have torn apart. Because I know that I never went up. I mean, if they'd asked me to whistle it, I could have whistled it, but I couldn't have sung it or recited it. And it's stupid, because over the years, you should be able to, you know. But when the first girl gave it up, then the others, there must have been five or six of them. But it was terrible what it did to the whole atmosphere, you know. You can imagine the tension that worked out. So we all felt better about Mr. McLaren. He was we all loved him to start with, but boy, our respect for him went up a long way. They had basketball teams, you know, men's and girls' and boys' basketball teams. And I think there was a floor hockey team or two. The building, there were no outbuildings up there then, you know. This is what quite floors me even now. The extensions, this way and that way, it was always beautifully taken care of, the lawns were. One time we had a play outside in June. Well, that's where I had to wear that dress that I sewed. I was most uncomfortable in it. But it was sort of an at-home for the school, that all the parents came, those that were in Victoria. And we had this outdoor play, and we play, took part in the rose, you know, the, what do you call those?
Arbor.
And this was a one of the boys, a very quiet boy generally, but he was the king in this play, and he really had deteriorated seriously, and they were quite sure that he was not going to be able to reign any longer. But when he got an idea, when he was always clutching at ideas, running along and jumping up and clutching at this thing, it was an idea, you know. And he was such a quiet lad, we didn't think he had it in him, but he certainly did. He did a very good job. And of course, they had the, it was in costume, the courtiers and everything. It was pretty against the arbor, you know. It really was. Mr. Wood was our chap that worked with us on their plays. We did one, I can just remember a little bit of it. I think it was called Grandma Pulls the Strings. But I was grandma, and I had a daughter, and she had was being courted, and there was another younger daughter, and when the any time the boy, they sat on the settee, and I was that back in the corner with my chair and my knitting, and any time he got a little too pertinent, I would roll my ball of wool at him. But everybody was laughing so hard that, oh boy, I missed my line. And I looked at Mr. Wood, he was the, what do you call him, prompter. And I looked at him and he was laughing so hard, he was no help whatsoever. I always remember that. And the worst part was, I jumped over two lines of the little sister. Her name was Betty Davis. Oh, was she furious with me. I said, Betty, Mr. Wood was laughing too hard to help me out. You should have remembered, she said.
Did you have to make your own costumes for the play?
Oh, yes, we worked amongst ourselves and made them up. Yes, yeah. It was fun. It was fun.
How did you find that little stage getting on the
wall? We didn't do too badly. I think there was an added piece at the back, and we cut it a little bit so you could go across the back and come in on both ways. And actually, it had a door and a window in it that did for the dollhouse, anyhow, the doll's house. And there were a number, we did quite a few things. It was fun.
Was there a dressing room for you?
No, we had to go around the curtain. There was a curtain built, hung, so you came down off it and went in behind the curtain. That was all. But there weren't, in the doll's house, there really wasn't much change of costume, you know. When I think we avoided those plays like that. There was one play that Walter Shaw, he was in American land over here taking his courses, and he wrote a play and we put it on. And he adjusted things so that the stage didn't make any difference, the size of the stage didn't make any difference. But the building, now, when I go up there and I climb those steps, I realize that time has passed, because those granite steps are grooved with the passing of time. All the feet that have gone up there, the entrance steps on both ends, or the end and the front, and the stairs inside, the same thing, they're worn, that top layer of concrete's worn right down. Then you realize that time has gone. But that year was something we could never forget. Never.
Were you a local girl?
Yes, I was born in Victoria. Six brothers and a sister, we were born right opposite Victoria High School. And an elder brother, Rance, and a sister, Ivy, and a brother, Paul, and I went to Normal. And we used to walk from high school to Normal and thought nothing of it. But then you could walk, because there were fields and unfinished lots on the corner. There's trails across. You could cut corners. You could cut fields. You could cut what would be a 4 mile walk now, would be maybe two and a quarter then. And that big field where the Willis high school and junior. Right there at the corner. That was all a field with great big oak trees in it. And for years they had, that was an airplane, an aerodrome. There were sheds there and they had airplanes in it. And I remember after one lit afternoon, Mr. McLaurin and two or three of the boys, I think Tommy Little was there, Walter Shaw, and a couple of the girls, and we were all standing there looking out, watching this little plane that was just circling over the field, circling, and all of a sudden he went into a dive. And Mr. McLaurin gasped, "Oh, that's Benny Bendroth in there." Sure enough, it was the end of Benny. And Benny was athletic. I mean, he was always been athletic, and he was well known for his prowess, so that it was quite a blow. But I'll never forget that. That was the awfulest feeling, watching that thing come down. And poor Mr. McLaurin, he went as white as a sheet. We used to have to go, of course, did our practice teaching out amongst the classes, the schools, you know. I never really had too much trouble. There was only one time I used to have to go back to, if it was arithmetic, we went to Mr. Denton, I think. If it was grammar or English, we went to Mr. Wood. And domestic science of any kind, we went to Mrs. Bessner. And if it was singing or something, we'd go to Mr. Riddell. Well, this was, and Mr. McLaurin, he, when the criticisms came in from the teachers, if there was something that needed correcting, some correction in the students' attitudes or something, those crits went to Mr. McLaurin, and you had to go to his office. Well, you never went in there with any fear, because you knew that what a fair man he was, you know. I had been to a Miss Muslim at North Ward School, and she was a rather positive person. There certainly wasn't anything negative about her. She would open her classes with, you know, precision plus, and I think quite a few of us were a little bit in fear of her. She, you know, she just had that attitude. I gave this lesson, and I didn't think I'd done so badly. And the girl I was teaching this said, "That was good, Dorothy Springy. Don't worry, that was good." So came Friday, and I had a call to go to Mr. McLaurin's office, and I said, "Now this is about that lesson. What did I do wrong?" "Didn't do anything wrong," I said. "I did so." So I got in there, and what Miss Muslim had written was that this student may in the future become a good teacher, but right now she's too much of a mimic. I had mimicked her attitude, and he looked at me, and I said, "Oh, how awful." "Well," he said, "most people would take that as a compliment, but it seems to me that this teacher must have felt it did her no justice." So instead of crying, I stood there and laughed. Oh dear. Then at the end of the year, of course, there was to be a banquet. Now that banquet was, you went up, you know, in Government View and Fort. That, of course, was all burned out at one time. But there, is now the extension of Eaton's. Well, at that time, it was there were offices, but one of the clubs had a meeting room up there, and it was used as a banquet hall and a dance hall at times. That's where we went for our banquet, and they had a sit down banquet, a very nice one, and the teachers, some of the were chosen for to give toasts, you know, and. The teachers had their little say, and it was nice, and then we had a little dance afterwards. And then it broke up quite early. None of the things, social activities lasted too long. I guess the teachers realized that there needed to be a break somewhere, because there were house parties after it, you know. But it was nice, very nice, and... I remember going to two houses, but of course Mother had been ill, and it was a case of going to walking to school, but before I could leave Mother so that she would be comfortable over lunch, and I would get home as fast as I could. I never had much time for lingering after school. Camille, I didn't see an awful lot of it, but I did get in on anything that was normal that I could stay for, and listening to the girls who were... and the boys in this reunion committee meetings, I did know that there had been those who lived in Victoria, I think, were established in their own way of living, but those that came from out of Victoria, they grouped for picnics and bonfires and house parties when they could, you know. Did Ben Crawford give you another name? Sylvia Johnson it was. She's now Sylvia McKay. Have you seen her?
No, I've seen her next week.
That's right. So she'll give you, she was out of town.
You didn't get to mingle too much with the out-of-town people?
Well, the thing was, you see, it happens. I don't know what it happens all the time. But that was our Class A. Now... there aren't very many that aren't out of town there.
Oh, yeah, you really got to socialize within your own class.
Yes,
didn't you?
Yes, that's right. And that was Class B. Now, and those are nearly all out of town, folks. Class C was definitely out. That was all out of towners. There's no Victorians in there at all. And these were the boys. Let's see. Lynn Nichols. He was through high school and up into Victoria College. When we went to college, it was up at Craig Doric. This is Tom Little. Now he would be a good one for you to talk to. But he and his wife have gone south for the winter. He was in the meeting committee. This is Bev Fife. He was in dramatics. Where's Ben Crawford here? No. I find him. Crawford there. He's a very fine chap. He's spent his last 15 years as principal of the Nelson Senior High, and he's had about 4 or 5 secretaries, so he isn't very keen on doing the work. He has good ideas, but he said he has to have somebody that he can pull strings on.
When you finished your normal school,
mm-hmm.
Were there many jobs available, or was it hard to get jobs at that time?
Well, it was a little hard. I think, of course, I was tied by Mother's health, you know. That first year, I could have gone to Salt Spring Island. Now, that would have been wonderful now. But at that time, for Mother, in her state of health, it was... might as well have been the North Pole. So, of course, that didn't work. So I spent that year at home with mother. But I went substituting in Victoria schools. And then the next year came along, and Mr. Watson was the man at the buildings.
Tell me about Mr. Watson.
Yes, well, Mr. Watson was in the Education Department office, and you went to him and told him, and of course, he had the all your records from Normal, and he had all your records from all the way through, really, so he knew more or less what to do, and of course he had handled my one brother and my sister. I don't know whether he handled Rance or not. I don't know, Rance didn't teach until after he came back from the front. But I went to him for my second year. I went in June and said, I had gone back and explained to him that I couldn't leave home, that mother had been ill, but that I was going to substitute. Well, he says, as long as you keep your hand in, Miss Ringy, it's fine. So I went back, and the first school he gave me was Willow Point, way out north of Prince George, on the curve of the Fraser as it goes back down. And of course, oh, mother was better, but oh, goodness, of course. I was the last one of her chicks, and it was hard for her to let me part, you know. So I went back to him, and I said, Mother feels badly about that. She makes it too far. Well, now, that's all right. I don't blame her. And he sent me to a pavilion. That was, of course, up above Lillewood on the PGE. But I think most of us got at that time, we were pretty well placed. I know the girls that I went out with, there weren't too many that didn't get jobs. And you went out, I went in and had 36 youngsters from grades 1 to 9 and got $84 a month. Paid $35 room and board. Sent $25 home to mother to put in the bank for me, and so I didn't have much on hand. But it was quite an experience, there's no doubt about it. Though I used to think that beginning teachers should be kept in the cities under the eyes of those who knew, and allowed to just gel a little, because you go out full of, despite the fact that you've had a good training, you go out full of an awful lot of doubts. And then when you do get there and you find that you've worked out a plan, you find that you're having to discard a number of those things that have been drilled into you, you know. Well, it between theory and practice, there's quite a gulf. And you have to make those adjustments.
How long did you teach?
I taught, 6 years in all, but taught at Pavilion 2.
It was expected in that time that once you were married, you were finished.
Yes, that's right. I went back after I was married, though, and taught at Monte Creek for a year, and then we went to Kersley in the Caribou. And by this time, the boys are all peers. But, well, Rodney was 6 in November when we met up there. Bevan was 11, and Trevor was 14, and Peter was 17. So I put in for substituting, and I used to go off on the bus with them in the morning. I had 8 weeks in Connell and 4 months in Kersley and another 2.5 at Red Bluff, you know.
When you were in the normal school and attending your classes, you made a lot of things during each class that you were to use later
mm-hmm.
on.
Oh yes, we kept those. Went out with stacks of books like that. And that first summer, I went to summer school. and took a primary course, and I enjoyed it. I really did. And Bertie Cook was the instructress at that time. And bless me, when I got my little certificate, she said, completed course with distinction, which astonished me, but I did enjoy it. But see, when I got back up, when I did go out to Pavilion, heavens, I had a 16-year-old boy that was a foot and a half taller than I, and a 15-year-old boy I had to raise my head to. You know, you can't treat them like primary students. Oh dear, I didn't have any primary students in that 36 when I had the first year. It was just as well, because it took me all my time to get adjusted to all these. And the 16-year-old, he was doing grade 8. And the 14-year-old was doing grade 9. So that I was doing that with correspondence. But it did petrify me, and it worried me no end, actually. I went down in the dumps. I worked. And the place I boarded, they used to say, for goodness sakes, get your nose out of those books. Well, that's all very well, but I had to have what was in those books in my head, you know. But I really got quite depleted. And I don't know, but Tom Hall, he was principal of the George Day School for a number of years. He was the inspector that came from Kamloops. And he looked at me, and he knew my brothers, and he said, Dorothy, what goodness, you looked awful. I'm glad your mother can't see you now. You've lost, oh my goodness, what's the matter with you? And I said, nothing, I feel all right. Oh dear. So Tom said, what's the matter? He says, no, it's all right, and I just go and sit down. And he put my classes through their paces. And dismissed them and came over and said, you're doing fine, you know, everything's fine. Couldn't ask them better. And I said, well, you know, I think maybe it's possible that it's just the responsibility for so many small fry that's getting me down, but I don't know. As long as you say they're all right, it's all right. And then he went through my cupboards and he went through the desk and he said, you're a marvelous housekeeper. But he said, and after he left, I felt better. I really did. I think I really was a little afraid that I wasn't doing things the right way and lacked confidence as much as anything. But after he told me everything was all right, things went better.
When you were at the normal school, you had Mr. Freeman.
Yes, he was. Sure. We used to call him Daddy Freeman. He was a big man, and he's the man that had such a nice atmosphere in his class. You didn't miss very much. You might go to sleep, but you didn't miss too. If he wanted you to be awake, he could keep you there.
Did you want nature walks?
Now that's, the others all speak about that, but that's one thing I just can't remember. The others used to go up Mount Tommy with him, and as Ben Crawford said the other day, Dorothy, I'm going to have to admit that of the three nature walks, I slept in the locker room, but was back in class with Mr. Freeman. But he was an awfully dear old chap. He really was. He was. But as I say, I don't remember walking anywhere with him. But then when he took them up Mount Tom, you know, that's not very far along enough. And, of course, at Mount Tom, all that section of Richmond, that was just bush, you know. And Mount Tommy was, there were no houses on that side of the road at all. And all down, down where it's Cedar Hill Crossroad, that was all farm and bushland. It's hard to remember that. I didn't realize that. But you know how bushy it is between the administration buildings for the school board and into the college. Well, that was the same thing all over. It's like that.
When you were at the normal school, do you remember having a lunchroom lunchroom downstairs across from the gym?
Yes, there was. That was used in damp weather, yeah, cold weather, but usually we sat outside. I can remember more seatings outside than I can being seated inside.
Did you use the library at the college, at the normal school?
Oh, yes, for reference books, yes. Oh, yes, it was good. It wasn't as full as it is now by any means. No, it wasn't as full. But then, if what you wanted wasn't there, you'd go to the teachers, and they would always have them, because they had their own classrooms, and their bookcases were always full, you know. So if it wasn't there, you could get it from the teachers.
Were you encouraged to start collecting books for instruction?
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Of course, I had a lot from my brothers and sisters, you know, that, oh yes, they're awfully good, and they were right with you all the way, and they worked very quietly. You would feel it within yourself that there was something that you needed, and you'd be looking, and then you'd have a voice say, is this what you're looking for? So they used to keep an eye on you, you know. Of course, there were almost 150 there that year. But those we've only got, there are 18, I think, that are no longer on the earth. And we have only 26 names that we haven't found, the people we haven't found. The rest we've had answers from. We expect to have about 130 for our class reunion, because they're bringing their spices. They're bringing their spouse. Each individual has a spouse they'll bring them. But
have you kept in touch with a lot of your classmates?
About four. But I'm telling you, those girls from out of town, these girls, and quite a few of these, they have, because they didn't have their families. I mean, you know, they had more time for those in their classes. Margaret Scott, Margaret Cotter. Oh, and that was a shock. Margaret Cotter taught at Clinton when I was at Pavilion. And she came over for a weekend, and I went over there for a weekend. And she turned up one... Is that thing on?
Mm-hmm.
She turned up one weekend, and, she looked terrible. I said, what's the matter, Cotter? And she said, oh, shrinky. I got one fool of a married man who just simply flying me around as though he was a lamb. And I said, well, do you think he is? And she said, oh, no, I don't think he's any lamb. But I said, well, what? That's not going to do you any good, Margaret. I know it. She said, I've been seeing him just to tell him to stop being stupid. I said, well, I think you'd better stop that, too. So she spent the weekend, and she said, you're right. I'll just stop seeing him. I said, I think you'd better. Because I said, in a small place like Clinton, you can't afford it. So, 2 days later, Mr. Lottie Bowron, who was the teacher's, teacher's counselor or something, she had turned up on my doorstep. One of my brothers had been engaged to her niece, Eileen Bowron, at one time. So, of course, she turned up on my doorstep. And she said, I'm not here because if you had any complaints about you. No, 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 she said, but I'm on my way to Clinton. I said, oh. She said, do you know Miss Cotter? And I said, yes, I do, and she's a very fine girl. If there's anything wrong over there, it's not Margaret's fault. Well, she said, I had the most peculiar letters about her. I said, I know. She was here this weekend, and I understand. I understand her side of things, and I think if people would leave her alone, they'd find that things will work out. Oh, she said, no, I've got to go in and look after it. I said, Lottie, if you go over there, you'll cause more trouble. And most likely, Margaret Cotter will resign or something, and that wouldn't be a feather in your cap. She said, well, do you think she can work it out? And I said, yes, I do. She left here saying she was going, what she was going to do, and I think she's right, and I think it'll be all right. Well, she said, then I'll go on up to, where was she going? She went to the 100 Mile House. There was somebody up there having problems. Lily Pad School or something. And I'll come back. So I got Margaret on the phone and told her what had happened. Oh, she said, Dorothy, I am through. I've told him. I'm not seeing him anymore. And I said, well, just stand by it. She won't be back for 2 weeks. And maybe by that time, things all straightened out. She said, well, I'm not seeing him. And I said, well, that's good. She said, he's just a silly ass. And I said, well, you should have told him that to start with. But when Lottie came back, she came back to Pavilion. She said, I'm not going to Clinton. I said, good. Well, she said, I don't know what happened, but Margaret certainly got straightened out. And I said, well, I think the man needed straightening out. Some other man should have taken him and knocked his head against the wall. Can't blame a girl for everything. Oh dear. But she we've had letters and twice when I was in Lynmore she came to see me, and I went to see, she was going to college, UVic at that time, and I went over one day and went out to UVic with her. I had a Christmas card from her last Christmas, and made a call, and they said, she married a tyranny, and she's in Vancouver. And I asked for her, and they said, oh, don't you know, Mrs. Tierney died 3 months ago. Well, it was an awful shock, and then he sat right down on the floor, you know. I don't know exactly what happened to her. She was full. Everybody who you meet, all those that were here the other day were saying the same thing. No year has ever.
The grounds and the gardens have always been beautiful.
Oh, yes, lovely.
Have to do keep a little garden plot?
No, I think that was just the boys that did that.
Oh.
Where we were doing sewing, they were doing gardening or something. Mm-hmm. I never got, we never had any. But I remember they were out towards the back there. See, the Ewing building wasn't there, and I think they were there. Or else, yeah, I think they were. I can't remember them.
I guess the greenhouses for the gardeners
were
out there?
No.
Where did the gardeners?
I don't know. Where the gardeners had their greenhouses? I don't remember a building anywhere around that. No. That's what it. Really stuns me, and I go up there and see the extras. And then I was in the cafeteria at the Towson College at the back, you know, and a fire started in one of their waste paper baskets. Oh dear. And you know, I just thought, we got out of the building in a hurry, but I thought, well, my goodness, didn't take anything. And those buildings, you know, they're just wood, they go like wildfire.
When you were up there, you mentioned you had physical education.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember anything about the...
The auditorium. I mean the
gym downstairs.
Yes.
Was there a locker room for the girls with the plunge bath, the little pool down there? Do you remember?
There was a pool. There was a pool. And the locker room was before that, though. You had to go past the locker room to get down to the gym and the pool. And the... I always thought that the lower part of that gnome was a bit medieval in a way. It was dark, you know. It wasn't like the locker rooms at high school, which were all above ground. This was lower and down under. But still in all, it was...
Did you ever use that plunge pool?
No, I never used it. I never had any time to stop after school. I mean, the only
it
time...
It was open all the
years. Oh, yes, yes. I'm sure that these girls would the we'd be able to. Sylvia Johnson will give you an idea about that kind of thing, because you see, they didn't have a home to go to. They were boarding, and they had more time at school for this kind of thing than I have.
Did you ever visit any of the girls who were boarding in Victoria? From out of town, like, is they...
They boarded here? No. I had no contact with the girls that were out of town, except through the classes and the teaching, you know. But, no. I'm sorry, Miss... see, high school was like that, too. It was a case of in the morning getting up and getting mother freshened up for the day, going to school and coming home at lunchtime, getting your lunch and then freshening her up. And I didn't do much fraternizing at school.
So your school day was almost like a regular elementary school, from about 8 or 9.
Oh yes, just 3. I used to get home about 4:30 most times.
Spent a lot of time preparing lessons for your.
At home when I yes, I'd go to the library and pick up what I needed, and then I'd refer also to the books we had at home, because the. By the time I was at Normal, Ivy was married and Rance was married and Paul was no longer teaching. He was at Port Alice.
When you were in the Normal School, were you ever told that probably your career as a teacher would be only so long?
Oh yes, they're told that. They would much rather have the Mr. Denton was the one that was for the boys. We should have 3 classes of boys and 1 class of girls. That was all. It's a waste of time.
He was never unfair to the girls.
Oh, no, never. He wasn't unfair. I don't suppose anybody's ever told you his favorite habit. If he had a cold, he'd go and throw out the window and expectorate right out the window. One time, Ben Crawford said he forgot to throw the window up. Well, this is what I'm going to do. They put me in charge of the entertainment for that first night on the 14th. So one of the things I'm going to have done is to have a window in a wall and have just somebody walk over to it, throw it up instead. Oh, Mr. Dunnell, he was the art teacher. He was a tall, thin, white-haired, white mustache man. Very quiet. But a little caustic, as I remember him. A little caustic, but he was a nice man.
When did you learn in the art class?
Well, they taught us how to teach. No. Of course, there was nothing, no self-expression in art at the time I went through school. You got a certain... had a ball and you had to draw it. But when you watch the youngsters today, they're allowed to go off at all tangents, all the colors and everything else. I think it's marvelous. Watch my grandchildren and goodness gracious.
Were there dances and things like that? Was there a social life within the school?
Not that I...
We had the graduation, and there were.
Now, I was at one other class party, or a party. It wasn't a class party, it was a normal party. It must have been about in May, now where's Ferguson? Because I never saw that. I never noticed him, but he was at that party. And I thought, well, that's rather a nice chap. This one. Of course, I had Bev Fife had to do with, and Len Tickles, because they were Len Nichols' shop, and Walter Shaw. Where's Walter Shaw? He's in America. He's in Montreal, in New York right now. He's been, I don't know if he's teaching or not, but Pi Campbell, he's an individualist. He's not turn up for this thing. I am believing these kind of things.
But when you were at the normal school, other than your regular classes, you were very interested in the drama.
Yes, I was.
Was there anything else that you belonged to? Not sports.
No. I was born with a hernia, and I still had it until I was 42. So that sports were out, that was all. I never got into them. But...
There
wasn't a choir there. The choir was at high school. I was the head girl in the choir for 2 years at high school. And the reason I got into this drama deal was that I was in the matric play, and then I was in the play at college. And then, of course, when I got up there, they all found out.
Did you have a writing class?
Oh, yes. Who gave us writing? Right, that was Dunnell. Oh, yes, we did. We had that went in with drawing. That's right, it fitted in. And of course, it taught us all the ways you teach children, and children with fixed ideas, you know. And
did you ever have any guest speakers come in and talk?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we see Mr. Hinchcliffe was one guest speaker that came in. And... we had an artist who came and gave us a lecture on art, and we had a musical group came in and gave us to present their program of music.
This is on Friday afternoon.
Usually Friday afternoon. We called that lit. They had did all sorts of silly things lit afternoon. But the teachers always turned out, there was no lack of teacher support for anything that went on, you know.
Did you find that with 150 of you, were you lost in that big building?
Oh, no.
You filled it up all right?
Oh, it didn't do badly at all, really. Now, they may have, I think the people up there that are up there at 300 are more lost than we were at 150. I really do. Because... of course, they had the other parts of the buildings to the other building. But we had to wander up and down from upstairs to downstairs and around. But no, it was a lovely year. It really was. I'm keeping all these letters because I have a friend who... because I stayed that year in Victoria, we went out together. She went the year after I. And she wants all these letters because she's going to have to start doing something for next year. But when we went up there, Tom and Ben and I, to discuss the time at which we should have this, we couldn't get a weekend. The weekends were all booked for 4 years ahead. And the banquet hall and the chap that looks after all the food and all the arrangements, he said, it'll have to be during the week. There's not a free date for 4 years.
Yeah, where the parking lot is now, there's the big house.
Yes, that's the Dunlop house.
But it wasn't there when you...
Yes, it was. It was very new. But it was no part of the school. It was definitely, it was a family home at that time.
Yes.
Yeah, it was no part of the school at all.
Did you ever have any idea of, or know who put in the big busts in the auditorium? There was some up on the walls, and there was one on the stand by the stage, and at the back was a Hartley frieze. It's a Greek scene.
That wasn't there when I was there, no. But there was a bust. Seems to me it was on a stand by the down at the front of the auditorium. But that must have been an educational individual somewhere along the line. Could have been Socrates or somebody.